Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th Canto, Chapter 4, The Hamsa Guhya Prayers, Text 13. Antardeheshu Bhutanam.
Antardeheshu Bhutanam.
Atmaste Hare Ishvara.
Atmaste Hare Ishvara.
Sarvam Tadishtam Ikshtatvam.
Sarvam Tadishtam Ikshtatvam.
Evam Vastoshito Hiso.
Evam Vastoshito Hiso.
Antardeheshu Bhutanam.
Antardeheshu
Atmaste Hare Ishvara.
Atmaste Hare Ishvara.
Sarvam Tadishtam Ikshadvam.
Sarvam Tadishtam Ikshadvam.
Evam Vastashito Hiso.
Evam Vastashito Hiso.
Unto day, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated as the Super Soul within the cores of the hearts of all living entities, whether moving or non-moving, including men, birds, animals, trees, and indeed all living entities. Therefore, you should consider every body a residence or temple of the Lord. By such vision, you will satisfy the Lord. You should not angrily kill these living entities in the forms of trees. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita and confirmed by all the Vedic scriptures, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Pradesh Arjuna Tishtati. The Super Soul is situated within everyone's heart. Therefore, since everyone's body is the residence of the Supreme Lord, one should not destroy the body because of unnecessary envy. That will dissatisfy the Super Soul. Soma told the Prachetas that because they had tried to satisfy the Super Soul, now they should not displease him. Om Gyana Timarandasya Gyananjara Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. We don't often think of considering that killing other living entities is a form of envy. Many times we've heard Srila Prabhupada speak about how animal slaughter is actually a symptom of envy. That's because we really don't understand the full psychological import of envy. When you think of envy in the ordinary sense, as it's known in Western so-called culture, which used to have a predominantly Judeo-Christian backing, maybe you think of one of the commandments, do not covet your neighbor's wife, or do not, things like that. According to Judeo-Christian mentality, envy means someone has a new car, your neighbor, and I want a car too. Someone gets a job promotion, or someone has a temporarily good-looking wife, and what is he doing with such a nice thing? It's meant for me. Or in business, so much of business is based on envy. That store is making more money. Politics is all like that. He's got the bigger post. So, that's generally how we think of envy, but we haven't really understood the full import. First of all, envy is the root cause of our existence in the material world. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Ichha Dvesha Smutena Dvandva Mohena Bharata. Arjuna, all living entities are born in this world overcome by the dualities of desire and hate. These are the psychological reasons why you're here, if you want to know. Now, desire means envy. How can Krishna be the enjoyer and not me? I also want to be the enjoyer. This is the envious desire that arises in you. And as soon as that desire arises in you, you cannot stay in the spiritual world. you have to go somewhere else. And what is the thing that you hate? You hate following Krishna's instructions. Itsa dvesha samudrena dvandva mohena bharata. This is what psychologically binds you in this world. Envy of Krishna, a desire to imitate Krishna. And hatred of Krishna's instructions. Now, we really don't think of ourselves in that way. Oh, I'm not that bad. I'm a kind of a nice person, you know, in my own way. You know, I try to treat others nicely, and I try to be considerate, not cause me harm. But who considers themselves as being envious of Krishna and hating Krishna's instructions? Well, our hatred of Krishna's instructions is seen in our desire not to follow them all the time. And, of course, our envy of Krishna is seen in our desire to be the enjoyer. And this is something that people in Western countries have a great problem with. What's wrong with being the enjoyer? What you guys have a problem? You're just like some kind of killjoys? You're against all kinds of pleasure? What's wrong with being the enjoyer? Everybody should want to be happy. Everyone should try for happiness. That's normal. Okay, you can say that everyone should try for happiness, but the problem is you don't know what happiness is, nor do you know where to look for happiness. So what is the result? You end up working day and night, struggling this way and that way, trying for happiness. It takes so much work out of you, one way or another. And if you don't choose a lifestyle of hard work to be happy, then you choose a lifestyle of intoxication. And you just drug yourself up and stay in a stupor. And you hope you'll be happy that way. So, it takes great humility to admit, I don't know what happiness is. Those kind of persons come to Krishna consciousness. Everyone else stays away. They're very proud. What are these guys doing? What is this bhakti yoga? They don't know what pleasure is. This is what I said the first time I saw devotees on television. I said exactly that. I was my last year at university writing my senior thesis, the final paper. And my flatmate, he was there. He was preparing for his physics final. So we turned on the television for some relief. Because we were intellectual students at the best university in the USA. Naturally, we just didn't watch television in the ordinary way. We turned down the volume all the way, and then you could speculate on what the people were doing. But we were advanced students. We did not imitate the masses. So, we did that, and then all of a sudden I saw on the screen these people, you know, orange robes and saris and white robes and shaved heads. So, well, let's turn the volume up. These guys look really crazy. Let's see what they have to say. So, they were explaining the regular principles, their lifestyle, rising early in the morning, keeping pure, not doing this, not doing that. I remember clearly. I turned to my flatmate in astonishment and said, "These people are mad." I said, "They've missed the goal of life." Those are my exact words. They've missed the goal of life. I said, we should invite them to one of our parties. We'll teach them what happiness is. Of course, 1 year later, I was in the Sankirtan van distributing books. That's the power of Prabhupada's literature. Anyway, this was the pride. Who are these people with their regular principles? They had no idea what happiness is. We know. Of course, if you analyze our material life, you see we're just horrible, abominable. Yet we feel this pride. I know what pleasure is. So, it takes humility to come to Krishna consciousness. And a great part of that humility is that I don't know what happiness is. I failed at happiness. Then we can't begin to appreciate Krishna as the supreme enjoyer. But as long as we are puffed up thinking, oh, I'm happy, I know what pleasure is, Krishna consciousness is a bit difficult. And the whole psychological dynamics of Western society are trying to get you to feel confident that you're the enjoyer. Feel good about your lust. Feel good about your anger. It's healthy to envy. Don't repress it. Just get into it. Develop a lust for life. Sometimes when people are having psychological trouble, they go to psychologists, and the psychologists tell them, well, just, you have to do something you really want to do. All your life you've been listening to others. Now you figure out what program you would like, what you want to do, and do it. And I'll help you, and then you'll be healthy. Figure out what you want. You want a relationship? This is what one told someone. Just make a list of 50 possible girls or ladies, and surely, you know, one of them will come. One of them will be yours for a few days. Just don't. In other words, don't feel negative and persecute yourself if you don't have any intimate relationships. Quick, write down a list of 50 women you know, and I guarantee you, if you really think about it and just do a few small things, one of those is going to be yours. So, this is how they think they're helping people, by imparting confidence in material happiness. Therefore, no one will ever understand their envy of Krishna. Now, they are not meant to be the enjoyer in any way. It's hard for us to accept this. Constitutionally, it is impossible for me to be the enjoyer. This is tough. Now, what makes this difficult to understand? Intellectually, actually, you may say, yes, we're not the enjoyer. But there's a powerful mode of passion that is gunning you down. That's why Arjuna asks Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, why is it that the living entity is so pressured to sin, even against his own will? What's going on in this world? And Krishna answered, Kama Esha Krodha Esha Raja Guna Samudrava. It's lust, and lust only, Arjuna, born of contact with the mode of passion. So, when you're in the ocean, it's like you're at Perth, you can go swim in the ocean. Now, when you get wet, do you wonder, how did this happen? Anyone? You go to the ocean and swim, and then, hey, I'm wet, what's going on? How can this be? How can I, you know, become wet? I'm no fish. But, a little reflection, and you understand, well, I'm in the ocean, obviously, I'm going to get wet. I went for a swim, so. Similarly, we have to understand, within this material world, the three gunas, the three modes of nature, are king. It's not the government, it's not our plans, it's the three modes of material nature. They control everything. So when you're within the material world, you're at the mercy of the three modes, and you're going to feel passion, you're going to feel ignorance. Rarely these days you'll feel some goodness. So this is what makes self-realization difficult. These attacks of the mode of passion, in which it's like you're being held up by a bank robber. You can imagine yourself, you're working as a cashier in a convenience store, and someone comes with a gun and says, just give me all the money. Empty out the cash register. What can you do? So, material nature makes you feel like that. Material nature attacks you. Mode of passion. Just surrender to the mode of passion. Surrender to lust. Okay, what can I do? It's just so powerful. I have no other choice. We're tormented. Well, I do have some desire to serve Krishna. I do have some desire to act properly, but who can resist this powerful tsunami of passion? Who can resist? This shows you how weak we are and how powerful material nature is. But Krishna promises in Bhagavad Gita, Daivyesha Gunamai, Mama Maya Drataya, Mameva Ye Prapajante, Mayam Etam Tarantite. Although material nature, the tsunami of material nature is so extraordinary, it can be overcome by Krishna's mercy, he'll turn the heat down. So bhakti yoga means to convince Krishna, please turn the pressure down. But how will you ever convince Krishna of that when there's pride that I know what pleasure is? I'm okay. I'm not that bad. I mean, some people may have come to Krishna consciousness out of distress, but I'm not like that. I came because, well, I was just looking for a nice alternative way of living. I was looking for some better techniques to add to my already successful lifestyle. Or, I'm from India and this is the way of my grandparents and I wanted to please my father and grandfather and so I added a little bit of the ancient culture to my life. It's good for the children also, you know, to know a bit about their country. So, in this way, we fail to appreciate our very dangerous position, thinking I am the enjoyer in this world. And the whole process of bhakti yoga is how to cleanse that desire. That's why we have ashrams. All ashramas, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, are meant for this one purpose of extinguishing the flame of material enjoyment, in which you think you are the enjoyer. It's not just that the process of bhakti yoga cleans out the material enjoyment. The part of the problem is you think you are the enjoyer. Now, many times, it's like we make a division in our consciousness. Okay, I don't mind the material enjoyment being cleaned out for a while, but let me hold on tight to thinking I'm the enjoyer. And that's what produces frustration in us after a while. We say, okay, Krishna, take all this material sense objects away. I'll follow the regular principles. I'll try to make the best of my human form alive. Take all my wonderful perks away. Take away all my wonderful comforts. I'll just serve you. But then after a while, I don't know if I can go on like this. Start becoming like a grouchy dog. Things are getting a little bit tough, and it's been a while, you know. Devotees are getting on my nerves. Same old schedule every day, wedding program, devotional service. You know. When's it going to be something for me? So, we get that in us because we have not cleansed the heart of thinking we are the enjoyer. We've allowed Krishna to take away some material sense gratification, but we haven't allowed him to take away the consciousness that I am the enjoyer. That we want to hold on tight to. Sometimes we reserve it for a future use. Yeah. Okay. I'm a new bhakta. I'm a brahmachari. Or I'm a good grihastha following dharma. My wife is a partner in dharma, religious activity. But then you think, oh, it's been a while doing that. You know, I've been good for a few years. Now it's time to, you know, be more natural. Now it's time to, you know, admit to myself that I'm not a saint and let things go their natural way. So once again, what's happened is that we put our thinking that we are the enjoyer on the shelf. We haven't gotten rid of it. We've just reserved it for a while. We preserved it for future use. So if we really want to come to grips with Krishna consciousness, daily, actually, we have to come to grips with who's the enjoyer. That's what bhakti yoga is all about. Every time you engage in the process of devotional service, one of the processes of devotional service, every time, you're actually coming to grips face to face with this issue. Who's the enjoyer? Me or you, Krishna? Who is it? Is it me? No, it's you. That's why devotees must have devotional service. We've said again and again, devotee means devotional service. Devotee doesn't mean someone who just says, I believe in Krishna. Nowhere in Bhagavad Gita do you see a verse where Krishna says, just believe in me. Yeah. Bhagavad Gita is spoken on a battlefield. The most active place you can conceive of. And Krishna does that on purpose to show you that you've got to walk your talk. You have to put into action what he's saying, and then there is realization. So the whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita is how to take all your actions and have them work for Krishna's pleasure. In the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna did not want to fight. He was thinking of his own senses. We have to understand this is what Bhagavad Gita is talking about. It's not just that the Mahabharata is very nice cultural stories to read. We know all about the different incidents, Karna, Dushasana, Sakuni, Jonah. The real point is that Arjuna did not want to serve Krishna. He wanted to serve his senses, but his sense gratification was manifesting in such a high way, far beyond what we can conceive of now. He was saying, how can I kill my teacher, my friends, my relatives? How can this be done? Although this sounds very charitable, sounds very philanthropic, Krishna said, this is nonsense. You're speaking like a fool. Those who are wise don't talk like this. Asochan and Vasochastam, Pragyavadam, Shabhasase, Katasuna, Katasusa, Nanu Sochanti Pandita. The pundits, those who actually have brain substance, they don't speak like this. This is an indirect way of saying you're being stupid. So, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, however, Arjuna's tune changed. He said, Nashta Moha Smritir Labdha. Krishna, my illusion has now gone. No more moha. I'm going to do what you say. That means I'm going to please your senses. I will fight. That is the crux of Bhagavad Gita. And daily, we have this battle. That's why it is very important for all ashrams to daily bathe themselves in hearing and chanting, because this battle that Arjuna fought is our daily battle. You can put this, you may think, I'll put this struggle off till I'm old. But why put it off when you're going to have to cross this bridge? So Krishna consciousness is a now activity. Now that you have the human form of life, deal with this, cross this bridge. So all the ashramas are meant for crossing the bridge. How to deal with who is the enjoyer, me or Krishna? And this is what makes us grouchy. This is what makes us cantankerous. This is what makes us fret and get on the mental. Sometimes instead of getting angry, we just get on the mental. That's another way of rebelling. You just kind of, just take off into your mind and just become spaced out. Rather than directly say, I'm having problems whether Krishna is the enjoyer or me, you just kind of spin out in your mind. It's just another way of, being anti-Krishna. Oh, I don't know, Prabhu's. I'm just confused. This and that, and well, maybe, oh, maybe not. I don't know. And can you give me some advice? Oh, that sounds nice, but I don't know if I can do it. I know how it goes. That's another way of trying to squeeze out of dealing with this issue. So all the ashrams are meant to have us confront this issue. The householders, they daily have to battle. Who is the enjoyer in my home, me or Krishna? The brahmacharis and sannyasis, they daily have to battle. What am I doing? Why am I depriving myself of all the nectar? For what reason? Who am I living for? And of course, for everyone, no matter what ashram you're in, you come into this world with nothing, you leave with nothing. This is the fact. You don't know when you will go. Just like I was on the plane, ready to pull out of the airport in Tokyo, and then the pilot said, "Oh, we cannot go anywhere. We have one problem, starting one engine. So we're going back to the gate. So went back to the gate, and it took 2 hours to make some repair. They announced, "This is just a minor electrical problem. We're going to fix it, no problem." So of course, everyone is happy. Well, very competent. They before getting into the air, they went through a thorough check. They had our safety at heart. They're thinking of us, and very nice. So it resulted in me getting in late last night, but still, people, they feel, yes, our scientists, our engineers, they know what they're doing. This is all controlled by the Lord in the heart. Krishna, as the super soul, knows how to give everybody their reactions. So, in this case, the Lord in the heart, he dictates to the pilots, it's not your time to die yet. It's not time for anybody on this plane to die yet in this way. So go on back to the gate. Check that electrical system. Whereas just a month ago, this Swiss Air jet that crashed in the North Atlantic, killing everybody on board, the pilots, they noticed some smoke in the cabin where the pilots were, and they were checking. They pulled out their official checklist, which, could it be this, could it be that, doing everything according to the proper procedures. They turned out all the lights in the passenger area, and they told the flight attendants, just don't worry, it's no problem. We'll be making a landing soon. Just, people were eating dinner, stuffing their bellies, abominable foodstuffs, feeling very content. When you're flying, they like to eat a lot of meat and drink. Always drinking some kind of alcohol. So the pilots told the flight attendants, just use flashlights to collect all the, all the plates after the people have finished. There's no problem, no need of worry. So everyone's feeling content and satisfied. Yes, our pilots know what they're doing. Modern technology is proceeding okay. Just a little inconvenience. They had to turn out the lights. And, the flight attendants are collecting the plates with flashlights. I don't know. 8 minutes later, boom, they're at the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean. Impact so great that everything is just in fragments. Airplanes in fragments, bodies are in fragments. So, Krishna is in control as a super soul. The Lord is saying, you have your checklist out, you're checking, and you think everything is all right, but no. As a super soul, I know it's time for everyone on this plane to get their reactions in this way. So down they went. Does anybody learn from this? No. What's the thing they're most concerned with? That airplane was going to Switzerland. People who are taking an airplane to Switzerland must be taking millions of dollars in cash to put in the banks there. So immediately the divers are going, going through so much trouble. Let's get down to the bottom of the ocean, find that cash. And the airlines helps them, puts out statements. We have, from our investigations, we determined there was about $4 million U.S., in cash on that plane, so the divers just, let's go for it. So much trouble they'll take for money. But to become Krishna conscious? I don't know if I can do that. To go down to the bottom of the ocean to recover money? Oh, yes, of course. That's the sure thing. So this is our madness that we don't really learn from life. We can't see how the super soul is guiding everyone, guiding everything. Prabhupada explains that what people call intuition, this is a very popular word, and these days just use your intuition, consult the voice within. Got one message from one devotee about a month ago saying, I'm in Boston now and I want to come to New Zealand because the voice within has told me that'll be a safe place when all the disasters come. And he said, is that why you spend time there? Because, you know it's a safe place from the disasters? I just sent back a message. I said, well, you know, it's improper for a sannyasi to, you know, think, let me stay in this place because it'll be safe in the material world. I said, you know, I may be in Auckland now, but I'm heading to Tokyo and into Los Angeles, earthquake locus. And I said, as far as the voice within telling you New Zealand was a safe place, I said, did the voice within tell you about the immigration department and its requirements? he's from Macedonia, you know. So I said, you know, the immigration department's heavy even on people from respectable European countries or America. What to speak of Macedonia, you know? So I said, did the voice within tell you that? I said, anyway, yeah, I said, if you're looking for a safe place in this material world, it's not there. I said, New Zealand's nice. It's got a volcano in the center, and the coastlines were formed by earthquakes. But you're welcome to try to come. But I said, as far as I know, there's no safe place in the material world, not even Brahmaloka. So, this is, of course, certified by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Ah, Brahma Bhuvana Loka, Punarvatina Arjuna. From the highest to the lowest places in the universe. They're all not meant for habitation by intelligent people. Sometimes Prabhupada would refer to the Earth planet as this seventh class planet. So, we don't know how to consider our material situation. The Lord in the heart is giving intuition to everybody, but that intuition is different for the devotees and the non-devotees. For the non-devotees, the intuition comes in terms of reminding them what their past desires are. We're so tiny and limited that you can't even remember what you wanted in your previous life without Krishna. We're also proud of our desires. Yeah, I want this, I want to be that, I want to feel this. But we forget at the time of death. So, in the next life, the Lord in the heart, the super soul, he reminds you, don't you remember in your past life you wanted this or that? Here's your chance. I actually advise you not to go for this, but you want, so here's your chance. So that kind of intuition, everyone gets. For the devotee, however, Krishna gives a different kind of intuition. He says, tesham sasata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. For those who are worshipping, who are rendering service to me constantly with affection, priti, I, from within the heart, give the intelligence how to come to me. This is not ordinary. This is devotional service done with affection, not with a grudge or wanting some material benefit. And the Lord also says, tesham aham, tesham evanukam partham, aham agena jantamah. Out of compassion for you, I from within your heart will destroy the ignorance that's troubling you. I'll destroy it with the shining lamp of knowledge. So all this is super soul action. Everybody gets it, but it's different according to what you want. The animals, they're all guided by super soul. Animals do surprising things, but no one knows the reason. Ordinarily you think, why is it that when a little baby puppy or a little baby piglet is born, immediately they know how to suckle their mother and get milk? They know where, they know, let me find the spot, let me suck and get milk. How do they know this? It's because the super soul in the heart, giving them the intelligence. There are much more surprising examples. You know, is it possible to get more air here, or we have to worry about the neighbors, or what is it? Yes, gets a little. So, you know anything about animal migrations? Completely impossible to understand materially. Just like in, there's one very beautiful butterfly called the monarch butterfly. They don't have those in Australia, the monarch butterfly. In North America, they do. They spend the winter in California and Mexico. And then, at the end of the winter for the spring and summer, they fly thousands of miles to another spot, north. Now, it's not that the same butterflies make it all the way from California and Mexico thousands of miles to the north. What happens? They die on the way. But when they die en route, on, you know, 2,000 miles going where they're going, their offspring take up the same route and continue in the same, going in the same direction to the same place. So, by the time the butterflies, the monarch butterflies, leave California for the winter, spend the summer thousands of miles away, and get back to California, four generations of butterflies have come and gone, yet the descendants of the original butterflies that left California, they come back to the same exact tree in California that four generations earlier left. That is the super soul. The same exact tree they'll come back to that four generations before them left. They're dying en route to their final destination, yet each new generation of baby butterflies, they just continue the journey where it left off. And they can come back to the same exact tree where their ancestors left. That is super soul. Or in, off of Brazil, they have these sea turtles. And these sea turtles, when it's time for them to migrate, they go through the whole Atlantic Ocean thousands of miles to this one tiny island that's about, you know, 8 miles long. And they all go there. How in the whole Atlantic Ocean do these sea turtles go find a tiny, tiny little island 8 miles long? They all go there. Now, of course, the mundane scientists will say, well, they picked this island, this tiny island, because there's no predators there. There's no other animals that will attack them. But the point is, how do they find it? You know, the huge Atlantic Ocean. How do all these sea turtles just start swimming thousands of miles and find this tiny speck of land in the ocean and do it every time? This is super soul. So, you want to listen to the voice within, you can do it as an animal, too. But if you want to go back to Godhead, that is the special thing. We want to hear Krishna giving us instruction how to go back to Godhead. We want to take help from the Lord to avoid material contamination. So Krishna promises you that help if you remain true to devotional service. This verse is telling us that the Lord is situated as super soul within the hearts, within the cores of the hearts of all living entities, whether moving or non-moving, including men, birds, animals, trees, and indeed all living entities. Therefore, you should consider every body a residence or a temple of the Lord. By such vision, you will satisfy the Lord. You should not angrily kill these living entities in the forms of trees. So we are speaking about how killing other entities, animals, is a kind of envy. How it is? Because you don't think about it, but basically what's going on is you're thinking, let this life form die, and I shall live. It's envy. Why should you live? I want to live better at your expense. No one thinks like this, because when you're a meat eater, you can't think straight. But actually what's going on in the depths of your unconsciousness is, look at that nice lamb. Look at that nice calf. That nice duck or whatever. That's meant for my belly. That's envy. You shouldn't live. You should be in my belly. It's envy. I live and you die. Your purpose is simply to satisfy my tongue. I don't want you flourishing. I want you in my belly. This is envy. I want to eliminate you. The humans, they're thinking like this. We want to be the happy ones. Our species should flourish. Everyone else is meant for our satisfaction. Let all the other species be depleted, but let our bellies become full. Yet, amidst this envy, they develop such crazy complexities. They slaughter, as everyone knows, slaughter so many animals, yet they take pride in saving a few whales. You know, when some whales are having problems on the beach or offshore, the people all get out and, save the whales. You know, they go through so much trouble, they get big write-ups in the newspaper, on TV. Some whales were beached near such and such a town, and all the people helped the whales get back into the water, all glories. Strange. So even within their horrible, envious activities of animal slaughter, they try to manifest some distorted compassion to show that they're really good people. So this envy is a very... it's much deeper than we have been trained to think about. Once we see that the Lord is in everyone's heart, then we start to treat creatures differently. We start to treat ourselves differently when we understand the Lord is in our heart. It's a big topic, but we could perhaps tomorrow we can talk about how you cannot see or perceive or sense anything without the help of the Supersoul. You think it's me. I'm seeing, I'm sensing, I'm knowing, I'm being aware. But actually, nothing is done without the Supersoul. The Supersoul has to see first. And then, because the Lord is in your heart, you see next. So, this is another thing to come to grips with. You really think, it's my powers of perception, it's my seeing, it's my knowing, it's my awareness. That much you think is really me. But actually, the whole process of perception cannot happen without the Supersoul. Have I told you once, I had one stunning realization of this once in the underground days in Poland? Did I ever tell you about this? Maybe tomorrow. Or what time is it? How long have we been speaking for? all right, I will tell it briefly. How I got first-hand awareness by Krishna, how the Lord controls perception. We were at, in Warszawa, Warsaw, and we were very happy because, the devotees were happy. We found a place where we can meet. That was always the big, problem, how to find a place where devotees could congregate, have kirtan, have discussion. Because in communist countries, the law was always there that anytime you have a gathering of more than three people, you've got to notify the local police station. Otherwise, it could be, you could be accused of having a political gathering. And especially if there's a foreigner there, you definitely have to notify the police. So, of course, obviously we didn't do that because, our activities were illegal. So, one new bhakta, he announced, my mother is going away for the weekend. We can have a meeting at my flat. Oh, wonderful, So, about 20 devotees, came to the flat, cooking prasad, having kirtan, discussing Krishna. So nice. Krishna, this is really wonderful. We have a place to meet and talk about Krishna. Things we take for granted now. Temple program. But these devotees were so desperate just to have a place where they could talk about Krishna, hear about Krishna. So, of course now, Indradyumna Swami tells me everyone is a bit soft. They've lost that those deep austere attitudes during the heavy days. That's the way human nature is. When there's tough times, then you really want to surrender to Krishna. And when the happy days are here, then let's not be so serious. Sometimes it's said that when devotees from Russia come to Australia, they have big problems. And for the temple presidents, they say, we don't no longer want to facilitate this because when they get to the lucky country, Australia, with the nice weather, the beaches, the dole, and everything is just so wonderful, they just lose their original spiritual motivation. I know you don't have any experience of that here, so. But anyway, I found the place to hear about Krishna. So, I was giving a class just like I'm doing now. I remember exactly what I was talking about, although this was in the early 80s. I was explaining about Shukadeva Goswami. He was an impersonalist, yet he got attracted to the glories of the Lord by hearing Bhagavatam when he was in the womb. So I was all of a sudden the front door opens and in walks this real big heavy looking lady. Looks just like a bear. She looked like the standard stereotype of like a communist woman. Big, just mean looking, no femininity whatsoever. So she walks in, everybody, oh. They were all sitting down on the floor, in a circle, about 20 devotees. And so she walks in, and as it turned out, the new bhakta was very enthusiastic that we all get together and hear about Krishna. And he was thinking his mother was gone. Anyway, he neglected to tell us one important piece of information, that his mother was a police officer. Yeah. It was just enthusiastic. Krishna, Krishna, come on, bhaktas, let's get together. Krishna. But overlooked a minor point, So, so anyway, she walked in, and immediately I could tell, this lady is a police officer. Everything she did was just completely disciplined. Her senses were like completely under control in that way. She just didn't walk in the house and, oh, what's going on here? Oh. She just walked in, froze, and then in the train way, she went up to each devotee, stared in his or her face, and then went to the next one. And the next one. And the next one. And the next one. So she's going around the whole room. And of course, sooner or later, she's going to get to me. And I don't exactly look Polish. In fact, I had to only go out at night because, every time I walked down the street, people were just like, where's this guy from? That was a real rarity, They couldn't figure out. Is he from Morocco or Italy or Turkey or, they couldn't figure out. They're used to seeing very, very dark people from Africa. But, or else very, very pale people from Slavic countries. But, they weren't, just brown skin, they couldn't figure out. So, obviously, when she got to me, she's going to know, this guy's a foreigner. And, of course, that was a great offense. You have a foreigner in your house having meetings. Obviously, it has to be politics. An American, too, CIA agent. So, she was just going from one to the other, just looking them dead in their face, memorizing their face, in a completely trained high police officer way, just very methodical. So then she came around. Finally, she got to the person next to me. And I was thinking, oh, boy, this is no way out of this one. Oh. So then her vision, I saw it. Her vision went from the person next to me, and it was moving right towards me. And then, right before my eyes, I saw the light leave her eyes, so that by the time she's a third of a meter in front of me, by the time her vision fell on me, her eyes were dead cold. And I thought, Hare Krishna, this woman is looking, but she does not see. And then she turned her head to go to the next person next to me, and I saw her vision come back, the gleam in her eyes, come back. And then finally over here was her son. And she grabbed her son, she took him in the kitchen, was beating him. He said, Mama, 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 you're having political meetings in my house. How can you ruin my career? What are you doing? So while she's pounding him in the kitchen, I'm running out the front door. And some devotees running behind me with the car keys, get away, because I always had a getaway bag packed, even while I was giving class, to have a little getaway bag next to me with the car keys and all the essentials in it. So I grabbed my getaway bag, and even without putting my shoes on, just out the door, So, anyway, later, after she beat up her son and, you know, screamed at everybody, I asked the devotees, when I saw them, we met later somewhere else, we had a hideout, in hideout spots. So I said, well, did she say anything about me? Did she see me? They said, she never saw you. I mean, she's like third of a meter in front of me, and she just eyes went cold. They became like stones, and she didn't see, although she's looking, she does not see. Then I had deep realization. Krishna controls the perceiving process. The Lord within the heart just took away her power of perception, so that she's right in front looking, but she doesn't see. So that was a powerful realization for me, how our perception is not under our control. This woman, a trained police officer, not ordinary police person, but a high-ranking officer, completely methodical, standing right in front of me. And here I am, a rare sight in Poland. I can't even walk around in the day because people, they see you, they remember you. Oh, who is this strange-looking person here? So there she is, right in front of me, and she could not remember, did not see. So, this shows how the Lord controls the perception that we think is ours. So we want Krishna from within our hearts to help us forget material desires, to stop looking at material nature as an object of enjoyment, to stop considering ourselves as enjoyers. The Lord from within the heart can make that adjustment. So by rendering devotional service, we want to convince Krishna, please do that. Otherwise, on our own, we cannot conquer mind. Any questions? Yes.
You can see what enjoyment we actually need to kind of keep ourselves from getting too, like, we will need some enjoyment to keep ourselves happy. Like, you know.
That's our whole program here. We enjoy by giving Krishna pleasure. It's a radical concept, isn't it? How can you enjoy by making Krishna happy? But you're part of Krishna. So that you have to experience. The whole process of bhakti yoga here is to give you the experience that by serving Krishna, automatically you're happy without worrying about it. This is the thing you have to become acclimated to. When you take prasad, aren't you happy? But you are simply participating in Krishna's enjoyment. Devotees have cooked the prasad and offered it to the Lord with love and devotion. So, you're honoring Krishna's enjoyment. When you dance and chant, you're happy, yes? So, but you're glorifying Krishna. You're giving the pleasure to Krishna. Yet you're happy. And gradually you'll find out that by doing so many things, so many services, which actually seem difficult or things you normally wouldn't do, you're actually happy. Just like book distribution. Normally, would you ever go out in the street with books and try to stop someone? Please, I have a book about God. Normally, you'd never do such a thing. But for Krishna, you do it. And then somehow or other, you're so satisfied. So many other services are sacrifice. Being a manager or even simply trying to raise a family in Krishna consciousness, it takes effort. So it seems, how can it be that I'm happy if I'm doing everything for Krishna? But you'll get that appreciation, you'll get that taste, don't worry. We don't try to enjoy directly, we enjoy by giving pleasure to Krishna. The hand brings the food to the mouth. Prabhupada gave the example. Sometimes he would even say, I've said this so many times. I remember I was watching him speak at Ratha Yatra in Berkeley, and finally it hit me. He said, I've said it again and again. The hand brings the food to the mouth. The hand does not try to enjoy the food itself. Try it next time you're having a feast. Okay, tell your hand, just eat the food yourself. Try it. Your hand can squeeze the prasad as much as you want. But still, is the hand satisfied? No, the hand will only be satisfied when it brings the food to the mouth, and then the whole body becomes energized. But our problem is we are thinking, I'm separate from Krishna. I've got to satisfy me. I'm going to be the hand that eats the food itself. The hand might say, I'm tired of doing all the work bringing the food to the mouth. I want to have it directly myself. It can't be. So by hearing, we'll start to get a sense of this. And we have so many processes of devotional service to fully engage your senses. Chanting Hare Krishna will give you that consciousness. Any other questions? Yes?
Well, I was having a debate with another devotee, and we were debating upon how I was saying that the modes of material nature are acting for us, that we're sitting inside desiring, and if we move our hand, it's not actually us moving it. And he was saying, no, that's the part of us, or part of our existence, that we're actually in control of, that we're actually in control of our body.
Our body is simply composed of the modes of material nature. Everything in the material world, except spirit soul, is composed of material nature. And how is it that pure spirit soul can come under the spell of material nature? Only by the manipulation of the supreme soul. There's only one way the superior energy comes under the control of the inferior energy. That's by the manipulations of Krishna to satisfy your illicit desire. That's why the Lord says in the Gita, Prakrite Kriyamanani Gunai Karmani Sarvasha. All your activities, they're done under the spell of material nature, but you think you're the doer. I could give another example, but the Hooker Falls example from New Zealand, but it would have a big waterfall there. But it would take some time. Hey, tomorrow? You'll be here tomorrow?
No.
All right, I'll remind me and I'll explain it to you tomorrow. How we become so puffed up that tiny displays of independence and think, oh, I'm so creative, I'm choosing. Anything else? Ladies, no questions? All right. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.